Welcome to Polycast, a civilization podcast focused on game strategy.
Canis Albinus,
Makalua,
the main team, Mega Bears fan. Good morning, Internet, and welcome to Polycast episode 368. I am one of your regular hosts, Mega Bears fan, along with Canis Albinus.
I'll get it done sometime, I promise.
Makalua?
Still trying to figure out why the heck I had my TV set to turn on this morning and wake me up. Ah!
It's to watch those Saturday morning cartoons. And the Mean Team.
Finding some of those frozen tundra cities since before some of you were born.
Oh, that's actually true.
Yes, it is.
Not quite. Were you founding tundra cities at the age of 7?
Pretty close. No, I was finding enemy tundra cities to finish them off.
Oh.
I think I was a little older than 7.
I
by
think
some
you're...
of you, I meant our listening audience, not...
That makes more sense, because I think I'm not 7 years younger.
Yeah, I'm not quite. It's not quite my birthday yet. A couple days yet.
Oh, congratulations.
Yeah, thanks. More age.
What? Another year.
Well, that's true. It beats the alternative.
Anyway, we have an August patch, or update. Well, it is a patch, technically. A patch and an update. We do have everybody, of course, this is where Siphonos is very great. They dissect everything in the video for us, so. Let's see. Wonder Picker, when you're doing the games, because there's a lot of them achievements that are dependent on you having the wonder in the game, and you might not know until, like, 100 turns in whether it's there or not.
National wonders, specifically in this context.
Natural.
But, yeah.
Yes, natural wonders. Sorry. Who said that?
See, that's interesting.
Was there a way to filter out, like, AI citizen leaders? Because that's something I've been wanting for quite a while now.
No, and that was the first thing that was mentioned in the Twitter replies. Okay, can you do this for citizen leaders next?
Yeah, could you? That would be great.
Yeah, go ahead.
Because when you need to do, like, oh, what was the whole one where you have to do the Indiana Jones thing and you need another specific AI to be in there, it's like...
Well, you can put specific AIs in the game if you go to advanced settings.
Yeah.
What I'm looking for more of is, like, way to filter out certain leaders, because it's like, okay, I'm tired of playing against Alexander, or even if I'm picking a random leader, it's like, okay, I don't want to pick a specific leader, but I don't want this one leader that I've already played as, like, 5 times before, you know? So I want to filter out that one and then pick any other random one. Or I just want to pick one from the new DLC, or I just want to pick one from the latest expansion, or I just want to pick one from the vanilla game. You know, filters like that would be nice.
And when you're getting the random assortment of AI against you, you're so sick of that. You said, or Ethiopia is so powerful right now. It's like, can you not?
Yeah, please don't give me Grand Colombia and Ethiopia.
Yeah, it's the same game. Oh, God.
What was that achievement in Civ 5? You had to pillage an Egyptian burial tomb with an archaeologist, with a German archaeologist within 2 tiles or something?
Yeah.
It was very complicated and involved.
I think everybody that got that set it up in a multiplayer game, had a friend, and then they swapped sides and did it for the other person.
Well, it's either that or you just, like, set it all up in World Builder, maybe, and then just play.
Oh, yeah.
I did that for a lot of strategy guide testing, and I think I got an occasional accidental trophy just because I happened to set things up so that I was like, you know, like some of them are for like pillaging improvements with a specific unit, like a unique unit or something for the unique units that are specialized for pillaging and hit-and-run attacks, and I accidentally may have gotten a few of those just by setting things up in World Builder just to like test how it all worked.
Oh.
You know, guys, you could make any sort of randomization setup you want in an Excel spreadsheet. Chalala.
Oh, no. I don't want to Excel spreadsheet my Civ game, mostly yeah. Because that would require me to install a version of Excel that could run with hex grids.
I mean, you could just use the freebie software that's like Excel anyway. It's not like we have very involved formulas for this sort of stuff.
Speaking of which, is there such a thing as Excel for a hex grid?
I don't know.
That's a very specialized
I think hex grids still have, like, an XY coordinate, so it just works a little different than a regular XY Cartesian coordinate.
It is definitely something you can do with other programs, but I don't think Excel can do it well.
And I think in the case of the Civ games, I think it's a lot easier to map the hexes to an XY coordinate grid because it is a rectangle. It's not like we're playing on like a soccer ball or something.
Yeah.
That's true.
So it is literally just rows of hexes. So you just number each hex in each row and then tell what row it is and you have yourself a grid.
Civ maps are kind of like those signs in the UK that have the footballs on them that, even though they look like footballs, would not be possible geometrically because of the amount of space shown on them. I forget which ones those are.
No yeah, idea you what could, you're talking about.
You can RNG sort the leaders and just not pick the ones that you don't want as you go top down. And not only that, you could put this right next to your microplanning spreadsheet work. So it's great.
Save on one screen, spreadsheet on the other. Oh, boy.
How do you do that, though, when it's not a Civ spreadsheet on the other monitor?
Well, what do you mean?
I have a spreadsheet open on one of my other monitors that's just like, this is the amount of things you have to pay attention to while this is going. And they are not Civ-related. They are more, this is the number you need to watch at this point. You know, statistics stuff. But I have the Civ game going on the other monitor because I'm bored.
Well, in that case, you'll just have to add a new tab to your spreadsheet. Civ micro planning.
Oh, dear.
Oh, yeah.
You need to know what turn you're planning to finish that Oracle Wonder, for example.
Well, it's always turn 40, isn't it?
Not always. You might be able to shave off even two turns if you chop with that worker.
Well, you're not going to be able to chop if forest fires last longer.
Well, if you chop down all the forests can't burn, can they?
Well, you're not chopping down all the forests in the world, because the AI still has forests, and the forest fires will still last longer. Hey, that's another thing in this update.
That is true.
We never did find out whether or not they fixed the thing where satellite strikes and forest fires became natural disasters only, because they disappeared from the base game after the Ethiopia patch.
Boom.
I don't know how I feel about forest fires lasting longer, because again, we're thinking about turns and the scale-up turns. Like a four-decade forest fire is a little much, in my opinion.
California the last 20 years?
Yeah, well,
California's annual forest fire type stuff is one forest fire, I guess.
As we've explained many times before, it's not one single necessarily forest fire that lasts for 500 years. It's that this is a period of time in which there were more than usual or more severe forest fires than normal. Same deal with the hurricanes and the tornadoes and all that stuff. Heck, even a volcanic eruption.
On this scale.
Oh,
but that does happen. If there's a bad drought for, like, 50 years.
I mean, what, Australia's going on, like, I think has been in a drought since, like, what, the mid-90s or early 2000s? I think technically so is California, although I think California maybe has had like a couple of years where they've technically been out of drought, but then like the next year they're right back in it.
California is weird, though. California's climate is not typical of where, of what those of us on the western side or eastern side of the country would think of as normal.
Well, and it also wouldn't surprise me if California was originally, like, discovered and settled, you know, by European colonists during a time in which it was particularly wet and fertile, and they just assumed that's the way it always was.
Yeah.
And then it went back to a dry normal, and then an even drier drought, and, like, people keep expecting and hoping it'll go back to being the way it was 200 years ago, and it's like, no, that was an exception to the rule, not the rule.
People forget that as much as we like to think the climate is very dependent on us, sometimes it just does what it wants, and we can't do anything about it.
It has its own cycle, although we're messing up that cycle a little bit, but it still has its own way it wants to go.
We're definitely not helping.
Yeah. We're unhelping. Other new game mode thing, you can get a Tech and Civics Shuffle, which it's basically what you do and how you get stuff in the future era, but applied all the way down the tech tree.
But they're also making it blind, right? Or just a separate setting you can use. So you can have randomized tech.
I think they're the same setting.
Okay.
They're blind.
I wasn't
and
sure if they were tethered to each other or not when I was watching.
I think it's
it would be cool if you could do them separate. Like, it would be cool if you could do random and see everything, or do blind and, well, random. There's no point in doing blinded with a default tech tree, but
I don't remember.
There was a similar thing in Alpha Centauri where you could make it. You just had to put your research into a certain category, and you didn't know what you were going to get. So in replays, it made it. It's like adding in a little bit extra difficulty once you've gotten fairly decent at the game. You could throw that in, and it would make it more difficult because there was always a certain optimal path you wanted to take, but this forced you to do things differently.
Well, that was a huge part of their design, though, because there's a lot of strategy that interacted with that. Like, certain factions were more likely to pull certain classes of technology, and that was part of the trading game as well.
My experience has been that a lot of Space 4Xs have randomized technologies, or semi-randomized technologies, anyway.
Or the option for it, at least.
But we're not getting that with this. This is, I believe, my understanding is that we are getting the same text. They are just going to be shuffled in terms of prerequisites and what they lead to.
Yeah, and they're still in a tree, you know, same and still broken up by eras.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, so you're not going to get, like, fusion tech as your, like, third option.
Well, I feel like the design of the game, because everything comes out of the tech trees, it kind of has to be that way.
Oh, yeah. The game is totally awake.
Yeah, it would be very difficult to do otherwise with the game already built.
and even with the shuffling techs, you know, even in the small scale as in eras, like, it's still possible to run into issues with, like, unit upgrade paths and requirements and prerequisites and stuff like that, because there's some cases where, like, I don't know, is it now possible to unlock swordsmen before you have unlocked iron? Is that something that's possible now?
I would imagine it probably is possible.
Yeah.
But you still wouldn't be able to build them until you found the iron, so.
Yeah.
Right.
I guess it's giving you a shuffle mode, so you maybe to help you not fall into the, I'm going to research the same things in the same order every time. Because it does feel like, when we did the multiplayer game with a couple of exceptions of, depending on, like, which civ I get, and I'm just plugging in, like, the next, like, four or five or six texts, like, just go through this and get back to me later. And the same thing with the civics. Go through this little tree and get back to me later. You know, so this might force a little more prioritization, I guess.
Yeah, I've talked about
it. Interestingly, you can, like, trade for iron and build swords without knowing where your own iron is in that scenario.
I think you can do that even in normal. Like, if the other AIs are accumulating resources, I think you can buy and sell them. And you can also, if you're suzerain of a city-state, and the suzerain has unlocked it and is improved it, I think you get the resource as well, even if you have not revealed it.
I don't think so, actually, now that I'm thinking about it, because the symbol doesn't show up in the corner until you know what the resource is.
Well, in most cases, it, by default, you would have the tech for the resource with that before you get the tech for the unit. Although that's not true for oil stuff.
Right.
Oh, yeah, because we have the one great leader, great person that gives you that.
Yeah.
Oh, you're right. So I think I'm wrong.
About what?
About what I just said about it only being visible once you know the...
I think it's an or thing, where if you've revealed it, or you have some of it. Because you can also get resources from Goody Huts now. So every now and then you walk onto a Goody Hut and it just gives you like 10 or 20 horses or iron or something like that.
And if you capture a city that has an oil well and you don't know what an oil well is, I don't think it destroys your oil well.
Is there just a well there on a blank tile?
Okay, if you're at war with a civilization that has an improved oil resource, and then you capture their city, but you don't know what oil is, does it destroy the resource? Or not the resource, the improvement? I don't think it does.
I don't think so. I think there's just a well there on a blank tile that does nothing for you.
Well, the well might still generate improved yield, because I think that's just inherent to the improvement, whether you can see the luxury or the resource under it or not. But yeah, that's an interesting edge case that I don't think I've ever actually come across in the game, usually because I'm ahead of the AI civs and all that sort of stuff. But
usually
by
the time oil shows up, you're either in charge or...
Or I've restarted the game.
Or you're dead, yeah.
Yeah. Pick one.
But yeah, I've been, in the last few episodes, I've talked about how the scenarios, or the little custom modes that they've added, the secret societies and, Apocalypse mode, didn't really appeal to me all that much because of how, you know, fantastical they are. But this tech and civic shuffle is something that I might actually play.
Well, that's good. There's something for everybody.
Yeah, if they finally came, I'm guessing this is one of the ones that they talked about as being, one of the historical inspired ones, I guess. That's certainly the closest.
Mode, though?
Is it, or is it just an option?
I think it's just an option.
Oh, like in the advanced settings or something?
I think so.
Okay, well, either way, it is more likely to get more play from me than either Secret Societies or Apocalypse Mode, which I still have yet to actually play either of those. So,
Apocalypse Mode is really fun. You just have to remember, don't settle on rivers.
Right, unless you have the Great Bath, and then you could just exploit the heck out of it.
Yeah.
And then some. We also got what is unspecified government plaza changes. Okay. I mean, we're changing some things to government plaza, you can tell. Now you can find out when the patch happens.
Maybe they added more than just two buildings to it?
Well, there's three for each era, or for each government type. Maybe they're adding a fourth building for the fourth tier.
It'll be more interesting when we find out what it is.
Yeah, I was going to say I hadn't gotten that far in the game in a while, so I was like, oh, that's right, there is a tier four. And this other...
Government Plaza. I was thinking of the new district, what the heck was it called?
Diplomatic Plaza.
Yeah, I was thinking of that one when I said adding more than two buildings.
Yeah, I could use a third building, I agree. But I don't know what the heck it would be.
Or at least some alternate options, you know, for the two buildings that are there, so you actually have, like, a choice to make.
And a bunch of events also unspecified. Well, we've made some balance changes. You want to tell us about that? No? Okay. It's in patch notes. All right. We'll find out if this patch comes out. We can read the patch notes.
I like how they did the second tweet. It was like, okay, besides disabling the Cliffs of Dover, what do you want to do first?
Do people not like the Cliffs of Dover?
It's apparently the most hated natural wonder in the game because it looks like you can improve it, but you can't, and it gives worse yields than a regular tile.
Oh. Well, yeah, no natural wonder should give worse yields than a regular tile. Like, that's...
I don't know, man. Their mountains are not high yield.
No, but usually the mountains have other bonuses. Like Matterhorn gives you the alpine bonus.
And a lot of the mountains have adjacency that they yield that they give to the tiles around them, so.
That's true. It kind of annoys me when you can't build an aqueduct to a mountain.
I mean, personally, I think my biggest issue with the Cliffs of Dover is that it's even harder than usual to build a national park on it because one of the tiles is likely to be in water, and the game won't let you build national parks in water. Just one of the many, many, many ways in which the national parks are just way too restrictive in Civ 6.
They should be able to be rotated.
I think what they should do is they should just give the naturalist 4 charges, and you just put the national park tiles on whatever tiles you want as long as they're adjacent to each other.
That would be about like what they're doing in Indiana with the national dunes. They're just buying random property and making it part of the national park, even though it's not contiguous at all.
Yeah, well, in the game, it should be contiguous, at least. And it should be, like, each naturalist should do, like, one, you know, national park. So the one naturalist has to have all 4 tiles, you know, be connected. But that's how I would have liked to have done it. And it should be able to spread between multiple cities. It should not all have to be owned by one city. Although I think, like, 1 or 2 patches ago recently, I think they changed the way that city tile ownership works. And because I remember for years, once a city annexed a tile, that tile belonged to the city, to that one city for the rest of the game. Like, you could swap which city worked it, but it still technically belonged to the first city that owned it. And it looks like they've actually changed that now so that if you swap what tile is working the city, it also swaps ownership, which has made things like chopping, like you have more control over what city gets the yield from the chop, and it has made placing districts and national parks a lot easier because you can actually change what tile owns the city before you place the thing.
Now, does it still keep original borders when it comes to conquered territory, however? Or does that change, too?
Well, I think just when you conquer the territory, you get whatever city or whatever tiles the city currently owned, I'm assuming. I don't know. I haven't seen the code. I don't know. I haven't been able to test that. That seems like it would be an exceedingly difficult thing to test without, like, having some kind of debugger running telling you what's going on under the hood.
Well, you could, the way you would test it is you would control 2 civs, and you would take your first civ and swap, well, you would make a save, and then you'd conquer the city, and then you'd load the save, and you would swap which city is holding the tile, right? And see if that changes the borders after the conquest compared to the first go.
That would be one way to test it. Well, there you go, Phil. You just gave yourself homework.
That's true. I could do that. I'm not sure I will, but I could do that. I was only asking because I'm curious, right? Like, if you guys had observed that, but if not, well.
Yeah, I don't know. I haven't specifically tested that, but I've noticed it in single player is I'm suddenly able to do that, and I don't know when that happened, but it happened sometime around when the first New Frontiers DLC content came out. Because I noticed it while I was playing around with the Maya, because I was wondering, like, how hard it is to optimize district placement with the Maya when you're packing the cities in so tight, and, like, the cities just start annexing tiles. And I was like, oh, crap, am I going to, like, screw myself over to where, like, I can't build districts in certain places because, like, the wrong city annexed the one tile, you know, that I need to put that, like, theater square in between the 4 other districts. And then I was playing around with it, and I was like, wait a minute. It's, like, changing which city owns the tiles. It didn't used to do that.
Maybe it was added when the Maya DLC came out.
Yeah, possibly.
Because it would have been required to fix it.
Yeah, maybe. But I was like, oh, that's nice, because I was about ready to, you know, write into my little strategy guide thing that I'm still working on about making sure that you buy the tiles that you want for each city, and then I saw, oh, well, I guess that's irrelevant, so it's not as big a deal. Once you place a district, though, you lock in which city owns the tile, obviously. So, that I don't know if that was documented anywhere, but it was a surprise to me when I played as the Maya.
I didn't see it documented.
Yeah, I don't remember that in the patch notes, but I admit, if it was like just a one line thrown in somewhere, I might not have caught it. I don't want to claim it's not there, but yeah, I don't remember it.
Is that all we have for the update, Mackie?
Yep, that's about it. It was mostly about the tech shuffle and being able to select the winders, and then a bunch of, we'll tell you in the patch notes later.
And the patch comes out on the 27th, they said?
Yeah, so that would be, what, so let me look at the calendar. That is
Friday,
next Thursday.
I think. Thursday? Yeah.
Thursday. Makes sense, because that's the patch day, publish day for everything, so.
Okay, so is that Pot Warney? He's on Sith Fanatics, and he's talking about, well, actually, this topic should probably come after the second one, but we're not going to do that because it's already where it is, and I've already started. But there's been notice that people have started seeing the Firaxis logo on all the different Civ leaders, and we'll talk about that in a minute. But during this process, people got interested in looking into the SDK assets from the dev tools on Steam, and they discovered some interesting stuff. Like, there appears to be things that we did not expect to be in the code. There's this guy that looks kind of like a pope. I think that's what they eventually decided he was. He was the head of a pope.
Speculation that he might have been intended to be, I think it was Innocent II.
And they found references to the city-state of Genoa as a separate civ.
And they were thinking he might have been the leader of that civ.
Could have been leader of that. And then there were also, like, what is the... My brain is not functioning properly. Assets from a Popeye-like character, because it's like a sailor hat and a pipe, and they were just kind of floating there in like it was attached to a head.
Someone suggested it looked like Douglas MacArthur. I'm speculating maybe it was supposed to be like an early like 3D model for the Great Admiral.
Well, they eventually did discover that that was a personal project of the modeler, and it showed up on his art design, or it's a website that does art on it that people post their art to. I forget the name of it exactly, but it's like a DeviantArt type thing.
Ah.
You know, this is making me sad now that we don't have a Papal State Civ in the game, because that would be hilarious.
Artstation.com.
You know, that would be interesting considering all the stuff we've got going with religion and how we can be super powerful in the game. It would make sense to have a papal state type of a thing.
You could definitely make a papal state like and put flavor for it in the game. I don't know that it's a good idea, but you could certainly do it.
Well, with how well received Venice was in Civ 5, I'm really surprised we didn't see a civilization, you know, a playable city state. You know, sort of civilization in Civ 6.
Yeah.
There's still time.
Yeah, there still is. Maybe that'll be in one of the New Frontier DLCs. But I was really surprised it didn't show up in vanilla, considering, like I said, my understanding was Venice was really popular in Civ 5.
Oh, that time in our multiplayer games where I random Venice and then I decided to open Honor was great.
Yeah.
That's still one of my more fun memories.
There's also the classic, oh crap, it's a lake.
Yeah. Well, so that's one of Canis's.
No. No.
Yeah.
That's not me.
It's all Canis.
I was so excited to get my boats out and it was a lake.
Let's just build a canal, obviously. Lol.
Yeah, in this game you could just build a canal, but back then, nope, not so much.
Not back then. So, yeah, there were references to an archaeologist, lead space archaeologist, they call Archie. And then they were able to put the skin, because there was just flat textures of skins, and they were very creepy because when you put them on a model, the eyeball was the top of the head.
Very Lovecraftian.
Yeah.
So
the guy, they suggested he looked like Churchill or maybe Khrushchev. And then they eventually decided his name was Frank. And that he was probably just a test from the early part of the game. But it was still very interesting. Because they also found like a model of Catherine that was labeled as for marketing purposes only.
Weird.
And they found clothes that they aren't sure who belonged to. And they also discovered that the Gandhi model doesn't have toes. It only has flat feet.
Huh.
Well, you don't see him full length at all? I'm not sure.
No, you don't see him in game, but...
Yeah.
Honestly, none of the leaders even need to have legs below, like, the knees, because you don't ever see them, so...
And they were finding art assets for people from the movies, like the daughter in the movies.
You mean like 3D models, or...?
Yeah, the 3D model of the daughter that shows up in the Firaxis opening, the Civ opening video.
Yeah.
They found her clothes, and they originally thought, well, maybe this is an unused leader, and it turns out it wasn't. But the more interesting thing that came out of this whole discussion was the part where they found Firaxis logos on all the Civ leaders.
Yes, apparently that's the thing. Every single Civ, I guess, has a Firaxis logo hidden somewhere on its clothing or jewelry. I haven't seen pictures of all of them. I know this. I think this started on Reddit with someone who circled it on 3 leaders on Frederick. What's your name? Gijara? Is that how you say it? Of Indonesia. And Jayavarman from Khmer.
Yeah.
And I guess people went and dug further and said, no, it's on every leader somewhere. So, you know, have fun looking for it.
This actually was suspected years ago, and we didn't have the dev tools then. And now that we have them, they figured out, oh, yeah, it is on all of them.
I think I remember when the Khmer and Indonesia, because they were, I think, in one DLC pack, and, like, they both had it, like, very clearly, and there was, people were wondering at that time, though, does just every leader have this on them, or is every leader going forward going to have it on them?
The funny thing was, this got re-brought up, not because somebody made a post somewhere, but because the Civ Twitter actually tweeted to a picture about it.
Look, here's a hide-and-seek, or not hide-and-seek, but where's Waldo game for you? Find all the logos on Fresh logo on all the leaders.
Yeah, scavenger hunt.
It did finally turn out, I believe, that some of them were literally impossible to find because they were hidden by the geometry. Like,
yeah.
I believe, who was it?
Maybe Wilhelmina? One was painted on Gandhi's missing toenail.
No. I mean, that would be funny, but no. I think it was Wilhelmina. It's like the top of her umbrella.
Yeah, you're never going to see that in-game. Well, maybe. I think she does have one animation where she holds it out in front of her.
She does hold it out very briefly. I think, like, when you first meet her, she kind of puts it down and for just a couple of seconds.
And I think also if she gets mad at you or there's declaration of war, I think she, like, closes the umbrella and, like, points it at you or something.
I think Eleanor's is inside the cup she carries.
Yeah, I don't think she has any gesture that would ever let you see the inside.
I think there's a couple of them that are functionally behind the camera, according to this person. I don't know how that would work, but...
Yeah, I'm trying to think of if there's any leader that's, like, holding something that's always behind the camera, and I can't think of anything. Unless they're talking about, like Montezuma, I think, has, like, a giant staff or something like that, and, like, maybe the only time you would ever be able to see it is if he pointed it at you, but maybe if he pointed at you, it goes behind the camera.
Yeah.
And then a Manator and Lady Six Guy similarly have a spear that might, you know, work similarly, but I don't know. I haven't gone
it
looking for them.
It tends to be
before.
On golden coins.
Yeah.
If they have, like, a gold medallion, it tends to be the Firaxis logo.
Where else would you put it after?
Just showing that the game is in an alternate universe where Firaxis controls everything.
Well, we already knew that.
Yes, but more proof.
Now,
the universe has noticed that.
Now, the community's homework assignment for me is to go find out if there's a Firaxis logo on the model of every wonder.
Oh,
right?
Gosh.
Go find me that.
Oh.
All the national wonders.
There's like a little a traffic sign on the Golden Gate Bridge that says, you know, Firaxis 2 miles.
But that's the wrong side of the country.
Yeah, whatever. Firaxis 6,000 miles, whatever. In that case, Phil, I segued you to wonders.
Okay, so this is Wonder Tier List by Potato McWhiskey, but fortunately, looks like Tiki Pie made it in text form, so you don't have to watch the whole video to see the tier list. However, it's been a while since I've seen this tier list video. My understanding is that he was reading this in the context of Deity Games.
Yes.
So this will be colored somewhat from that, because there's some wonders that you just can't realistically get on high difficulties.
Or that they tend to be lowly rated on this list.
Yeah. Yeah, even though, like, in a vacuum, if you could realistically attain them and you didn't know that you were going to fail to get it if you tried, it might have been a little higher on the list.
Yeah, my go-to would probably be the Colossus. That's like a free trade route. And, you know, trade routes are really good. But that's way down in, like, Tier 5.
I don't know that it's free if you have to build the wonder for it, but...
Well, I mean, there's other bonuses for the wonder, too. But it increases your trade route capacity, which could otherwise take a while to do. I mean, districts are also pretty expensive, and then you have to build the market as well. So is the Colossus really all that much more expensive than a commercial hub or harbor with a market or lighthouse, and then also spending the time building the trader unit?
Yeah, although there's a few lose it, too.
And it's also at a totally different part of the tech tree, so, you know, you can get to, is the Colossus with sailing, or is it with shipbuilding? One of those, but it's like, you know, you don't have to go through currency to get that.
Yeah, I'm going to be honest, I'm not too good with memorizing all the wonders, because I usually build the military units wonder, so
there's
I don't know where they are in the tech tree.
In our document, there is a second link that goes to a list of wonders that has all their stuff on it.
Yeah,
okay.
Very helpful, because this web post that we're looking at does not have any descriptions of what any of the wonders do.
I see.
So,
okay. Tier 1. Oracle, Pyramids, Colosseum, Mausoleum, Aquila, Kasiwani, Forbidden City, and Ruhr Valley. What do you guys think?
Those are all pretty good. I don't know what Museum of Halicarnassus does.
It's changed several times during Civ 6's life cycle. I think right now it's something like bonus Great Admiral points, and like every water tile generates culture or something like that.
Is this the current list you've linked? I looked it
yes.
up here. So it is science, faith, and culture on all coast tiles in the city, and all great engineers have an additional charge.
Yeah, at one point it used to be like you get a free great admiral, and it was
crazy. Yeah, it's changed a lot. I was a little surprised to see, like, when he was going through, but then he talked about it a bit, and I'm like, that's not what I remember this doing, yeah. I do remember him mentioning it in the video, just because I remember it being terrible, and then he put it high, and I'm like, wait a minute. But yeah, these bonuses are actually pretty good, so...
Yeah, they are now. I do think it's interesting that the Colosseum shows up in Tier 1, but the Estadio do Maracana shows up in Tier 3, even though the, you know, stadium is, like, the same thing, but better. I guess
well,
just because it's a late-game wonder, it's not as good to have.
It's late-game, it's very expensive, and you have to build the stadium to get to it.
Yeah.
Whereas the Coliseum, you only need the actual...
The district.
District, or do you need the building, the arena?
Yeah, I don't think you need the arena. I think you just need the district. But I think all these other...
On land adjacent to entertainment complex. Or,
with an arena.
Yeah, you need the arena, yeah.
Yeah, I was going to say, all the other like wonders that require a district, I think also need the first tier building in that district as well. Like the Great Library needs a library and so forth.
The Colossus only needs a harbor district.
Yep.
Yeah, the problem I always have with the Colossus is that I always try to build my harbors like adjacent to sea resources, so I would need to like harvest them in order to build the Colossus, and it's like, eh. Then I lose my adjacency.
Such an ideal placement for your harbor is not the ideal placement for the Colossus a lot.
Yeah.
Speaking of the Colosseum's high ranking, this is going to be a trend throughout this, is that wonders that are available earlier in the game are going to be rated higher, and in contrast to availability, you know, relative to AI tendencies, that's going to hold true for every difficulty. Things that actually confer a benefit for a larger percentage of the game and influence your snowballing are just going to be inherently more valuable than things that come later in the game.
Yeah, except for
Renaissance and later is just inherently going to be worse than Classical.
Except, of course, for Stonehenge, Great Bath, and Hanging Gardens, because good luck building those on any difficulty above, like, King.
Yeah, but if they were, like, if you could get them, they would be higher.
Yeah, if you could get them, I mean, obviously they're good, particularly the Hanging Gardens. But, yeah, like, good luck.
If you could get them.
Ironically, all three of those wonders are in the 6th and 7th tiers.
Yeah, I think Hanging Gardens deserves to be a little bit higher just because I think it's a very good one. But, yes, on higher than King difficulty or higher than Emperor difficulty, good luck building it.
Yeah, he plays on deity, so...
Yeah, I mean, I've started...
The wonder basically doesn't exist from his perspective, and that's how it goes.
The one thing, though, is that for something like the Hanging Gardens, that's one that you can take from another player and basically get the full benefit of it. The Stonehenge is different, because the Stonehenge gives you that immediate benefit of the Great Prophet. So once it's built, there's no point in taking Stonehenge from someone else. But Hanging Gardens and the Great Bath, like, you can... If your next-door neighbor builds it early in the game and you take it from them, you essentially have that bonus for the whole game. So I think that could also warrant moving those up maybe higher if you take that into consideration.
Yeah. You could get a little bit of faith from Stonehenge. It's not completely worthless to Congress.
Right, but
the majority of the benefit is gone.
The bonus that makes Stonehenge worth having... is, you know, which is basically being able to found a religion for free, is, you know, something you don't get if you capture it from the other player. And also, since in Civ 6 you don't get the bonuses of having a holy city by capturing the other player's holy city, you know, it's, again, like, not worth, you know. I mean, if you're going to capture the city anyway, then capture the city, right? But you're not going to, it's not going to be like, ooh, yay, that city has Stonehenge, I need to get that city.
That is something I missed from Civ 4, by the way. As the holy city status.
Yeah, if I take the holy city, why can't I start spreading their religion if I didn't make mine?
Yeah, in Civ 6, if you did not found the religion, you are eliminated from religious victory. I mean, you can still spread the religion, you just don't get, like I said, the benefit of... I don't think you get the founder bonuses, and I don't think you get the ability to win the religious victory.
Yeah. It's okay. I do think that given actual history and the relevance of holy cities and everything, it would have been cool to still have that be a thing in the game, controlling founding cities of religions and such. But whatever.
Yeah. I mean, you kind of would also think that maybe capturing all of the holy cities would also be a de facto religious victory. I mean, you're probably like one or two cities away from a domination victory at that point anyway, but you kind of won religion if you control all the holy cities.
Anything else to say about the Tier 1 wonders? I mean, they're good.
I never
they're
get
probably
to build,
good for a reason.
I never get to build Ruhr Valley. That's one of the late game wonders that the AI does always beat me to.
Really?
Yeah. For one thing, I never plan for it. Like, I always forget that it's there, and I don't plan for it, so I don't have, like, a readily available place to put it. I forget what its requirements are. It needs to be adjacent to an industrial hub, and there's, like, something else. I don't remember what.
On a river, on a factory.
Yeah,
I tend to build my industrial hubs, like, in the middle of, like, mines and quarries and stuff like that, and then they're not adjacent to the river. Although I have been shifting that to focusing more on building dams and aqueducts and then tucking industrial hubs in between those. So that might put me closer to a river, assuming that I didn't build the dam or aqueduct on that tile, which is the other problem that I've been having lately.
I gotta say, even in my data games where I'm, like, doing Conquest, Ruhr Valley is one of the few ones that I tend to pick up with some reliability. Like, I don't think the AI is too quick to get that one.
Yeah, like I said, it's just I don't plan ahead enough for it, and I don't have the district set up for it. Like I said, in the games that I've been playing recently, if I have an industrial hub that's next to a river, there's a dam or an aqueduct on that river where the Ruhr Valley would be. So,
fair enough.
Which is, I mean, also pretty good. It's like that's like +4 adjacency for the industrial pub altogether, and much earlier in the game, so... it's not really a loss for me. It's still a pretty good district.
Okay, so tier 2 wonders. Temple of Artemis, Mahabodhi Temple, Petra, Chichen Itza, Mount St. Michael, Michelle, sorry. Eyes are bugging out on me a little here. St. Basil's Cathedral, Big Ben, Oxford, Eiffel Tower, and Cristo Redentor.
A lot of victory-dependent situational wonders in that list, but they're all good for their victory type.
Yeah, and I think that's why they went down to Tier 2, is because they're very, very good in situations where you need them, but then if you don't, they're just kind of
Yeah, these are all of, like, the terrain-specific ones. You've got the Petra being the desert one, the Chichen Itza being the rainforest one, St. Basil's Cathedral, which used to require tundra, but they removed that requirement, even though I think it's still bus tundra. It's basically tundra Petra, unless they change the bonuses of it, too.
St. Basil's Cathedral does bus tundra.
Yeah.
But it also gives 3 relic slots and 100% religious tourism in the city. Must be built on a tile adjacent to a city center.
Yeah, when that wonder first premiered in the game, it required a tundra tile adjacent to the city center. So it was basically just tundra Petra, and then they removed that requirement and I think added the relic slots, because I guess people didn't like having a tundra-only wonder. I thought it was
Admin some Scott.
Yeah, that one I think is specifically snow. I don't even think that one is all that great on a tundra, but I could be wrong.
Yes, it's snow and snow hills next to a campus with a research lab. So good luck getting that.
Right.
I mean, I'm sure there's some AI cities where you could place it.
It's super easy to build. The question is it worth putting a city? Yeah, the question is whether it's worth putting a city in the place where you would need to build it.
Maybe it will finish before you finish the game.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say.
Yeah, that's the other thing, too.
As expensive as it is, and as not a lot of production sometimes you have with the cities, where it would be a place where you could put it, and since you would probably only be considering it really late game, yeah.
Okay, tier 3. Great Library, Develop Barkal, Hagia Sophia, Alhambra, Angkor Wat, the Potato Palace, Venetian Arsenal, or Shiraz. There's the research station here in Tier 3, so he actually has it pretty high. And then Estadio de Americana.
Yeah, I'm surprised to see the research station as high as it is.
I wonder what his justification for that is. Like, I watched the video, but it's been so long.
Yeah,
it's
I remember
really
watching
good
the video
if
well.
You can get it, but getting it is the hard part.
Well, right, but I mean, didn't, like, we already say earlier that pushed things like the Hanging Gardens down way low? Like, I would say the research station has the double problem of it being hard to get and also being so late in the game that it's, like, irrelevant.
Yeah, it is kind of late game. I guess he put it where he did for science tech trees, because if you're going for science, you're going to be going through the tech tree pretty decently, and then this is just a nice pick up the Shay turns as you close it.
Well, it is plus 20% science and 10% production in all cities.
Yeah, that's, like, this is not like Civ where multiplicative modifiers are like Civ 4. Like, you had lots of multiplicative modifiers in Civ 4.
Right, and
whereas in Civ 6, that's not that common. Like, that's a really strong bonus, considering.
And most of the wonders in Civ 6 also have their bonuses that are specific to the city. So the handful of wonders in Civ 6 that provide global or empire-wide benefits are pretty rare and therefore pretty powerful. Like, I think in Civ 5, Petra was, wasn't it like every desert tile in your entire empire got buffed by Petra? Or was it still just the one city?
No. Yes.
It might have still been the one city. Or maybe it was originally your entire empire and then they nerfed it to one city because it was too dang strong for...
I don't remember it being all, but I might have missed that part. So yeah, I could see, like, if you're pursuing this, you would have no trouble beating the guy to it, even on deity. Because, like, you need to invest in a city to the point where it has production for it. But that's worth it for this kind of benefit if you're going down that late in the tech tree.
I think the bigger surprise for me in Tier 3 is the Venetian arsenal. I mean, yes, it's, like, double units, but, like, are naval units really all that great?
I think his rationale for that is, like, it's either worthless, so you don't build it, or it's freaking amazing, top-tier wonder on some types of maps,
yeah.
In which case it's an obvious play.
But even though, if you're on an archipelago map, like, a lot of times you're probably already going to have the navy, right, in place by the time that this wonder comes into play. So I'm still questioning, like, how much benefit you get from it. The biggest benefit I guess I could see is you build a bunch of stock naval units, and then you combine them with your older units for cores and, or not cores and armies, but fleets and armadas more easily. Is probably the best use for it.
Doubling out and just for getting your frigates and then doubling every frigate you're doing and then turning those into fleets and armadas and, you know, it's still good even if you had a navy to start with because that lets you be an even stronger navy and sometimes on the deity when I've watched other people play because I don't play deity that often, but you need the extra strength.
Yeah, I'm just wondering if, like, how many games is that, like, really going to be so good that this deserves to be as high as Tier 3? I mean,
it's
probably...
It's situational, though, right?
Yeah,
like, so, when it's good, it's really good, and otherwise you ignore it.
Yeah, I'd probably only bump it down to Tier 4, personally, so it's not like I'm saying it should be, like, Tier 7, it's crap, but I think it's a tiny bit high for me, but maybe it's just me. And I like building navies in Civ 6. So, you know, that's coming from someone who, you know, that unit or that wonder is, like, you know, right up my alley. And even I'm like, eh.
Fair enough.
If the AI got better at using navies, then I'd bump that up.
So, Tier 4, Terracotta Army, Mianakshi Temple, University of Sankor, Great Zimbabwe, Casa de Contracion. Oh my god, I cannot pronounce that properly.
Concepcion?
No.
Contracion, I think, is how it would be.
Concepcion.
Concepcion?
That extra A is just hard for me to parse. Taj Mahal, Bolshoi Theater. Those are the Tier 4s.
Terracotta.
Honestly, I don't know some of these two offhand.
Terracotta is an interesting one. Yeah, the Terracotta Army is an interesting wonder because it's one of the ones that is really good, but it's also really difficult to use effectively because it is the one-time bonus of every unit you own gets a free promotion, like, instantly. So if you build the Terracotta Army at a time when you don't have very many units, because it's available fairly early in the game. It's, is it bronze? Is it as early as bronze working?
It is very early.
It is pretty early, and the AIs go for it pretty reliably, which means you do kind of have to, like, you know, not necessarily beeline straight to it, but you've got to, you know, be planning for it, you know, right from the start of the game and get your encampment district out early and make sure that it's, I think it requires does it require flatland or hill or something like that? I think this one requires flatland.
Flat grass,
and Alhambra requires hills.
Black Grasslander planes adjacent to encampment with a barracks or stable.
Yeah, so if you build it too soon, like, you basically don't get any bonus from it. Or, you know, the bonus is pretty negligible. And then if you wait too long, then the AI beats you to it. So it's a really, this is a really tough one to balance.
All archaeologists from the owner may enter foreign lands without open borders. Did not know that. It's interesting. Not usually hard to get open borders with AI, but...
I mean, if you're warmongering, I guess, then good luck getting any deals with them because they just instantly denounce you as soon as the previous denouncement wears off.
If you're warmongering, you have a way into their lands without
right.
open
yeah,
borders
if you're,
anyway.
If you're warmongering, you're not sending archaeologists anyway, so, yeah. but yeah, I guess that's also a very victory-specific one. So it's weird that this is also one of this like weird thing where it does like two very different things.
Yeah, and it's also like the longer you delay it, the better it is. So that's also an interesting interaction with that one.
Right.
I don't know. I feel like the AI gets it fast enough that I don't care about it in most cases, but it is nice.
Oh, yeah, it's very good if you get it and you already have a sizable military. And one of the things that's worth pointing out is it's not just land units. I think it gives the promotion to, like, naval units as well. And I guess, hypothetically, it would give a promotion to air units, but...
This Minakashi Temple is a safe thing. That's why I'm not too familiar with it.
Isn't that the one that gives you warrior monks?
I thought warrior monks were, it gives you two gurus.
Oh, gurus, okay. Yeah,
warrior monks come from the other wonder, don't they?
It's just one of the other ones, yeah. Maybe it's
I was never impressed by the religious combat units.
It's the... Shoot.
Kotoku Inn. I think it's Tier 5.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah.
And then I think the Mahabodhi Temple was like free apostles or something like that, which if you have a religion is really good. I think it's two free apostles.
And also two victory points.
Right. So yeah, you can enhance your religion twice or, you know, send them out to convert a couple cities real quick. So the Mahabodhi Temple is really good. Like probably the best religious, wonder in the game, which might be why it's, you know, up there in Tier 2. Oh, and Monte Mikel is also in Tier 2, which is, like, the best religious wonder, but not really religious wonder, because it's the wonder that gives your martyr promotion to all of your apostles, so you can just suicide them and then win a culture victory.
Yeah.
Very good with Ethiopia, by the way, the Monte Mikel, because you're going to have enough faith to buy apostles to just suicide for free relics, and still buy enough apostles to convert people.
Well, you're probably doing one or the other, though.
Yes, but you could do both, because Ethiopia gets that much faith. Anyway,
okay, anything else standing out to you guys?
Not really.
Yeah.
Okay, now we're getting to the bottom half here. So Tier 5 Wanderers, Apadana, Colossus, Huey, Teokali, that's probably not pronounced correctly.
Close enough.
Kotoko Inn, Statue of Liberty, and Broadway. A mixture of things that are just kind of mediocre and things that are too late to be relevant.
Yeah, Broadway way too late. I mean, if you're trying to do culture, you should have been gathering culture a lot sooner.
It is one of the rare places for you to put a great work of music, though. Which is helpful.
Yeah, there's not a lot of places to put those.
I mean, it's basically broadcast centers, and I think they only have one slot each, so...
Yeah.
I think the Bolshoi Theater might also give you a music slot. I don't remember.
I believe so, yes.
Man, how the Statue of Liberty has fallen.
It used to give two free settlers, so I think it's better now than it was then.
Wait, was it two?
I don't know. I'm thinking Civ 4 days when it was a good one.
Four free settlers.
It was really good in Civ 5, too.
But yeah. Oracle's still rated highly here. Oracle's fantastic in Civ 4 as well.
I think the bigger fall was the Great Lighthouse.
Yeah.
I remember that one being, like, super awesome in Civ 3, where it let all of your units just cross oceans.
It was even better in Civ 4.
Yeah.
To the point where, like, only the Apostolic Palace was more broken, probably.
Yeah, in Civ 4, I think it was something like plus one trade route in every city or something like that.
Plus two trade routes.
Oh, my gosh.
On coastal cities. Yeah, it was,
the broken of brokens.
Especially because you could abuse international trade routes or, like, settling on an island or whatever, and then all of your domestic trade routes were at least two commerce. Yeah. It was incredibly good. Just incredible. But probably not as broken as the Apostolic Palace, still.
Well, Apostolic Palace was basically just a free I win.
Yeah.
I win button.
Yeah, I don't think Civ can or should replicate a wonder of that strength.
What? You mean it's not your favorite wonder because it ends the game earlier?
Yes, but
you're giving us mixed signals.
It only ends the game earlier if your opponents aren't trying.
Stop being such a hypocrite, Phil.
It does not give the nation in the strongest position the win, to put it mildly. It kind of breaks the rest of the game.
I'm kind of curious what Potato McWhiskey's justification for, like, actually separating tiers 5, 6, and 7 into three separate tiers when tier 6 only has two wonders in it. Like, I feel like those easily could have just been thrown into tier 5 or tier 7 and collapsed.
Well, he started with the S3S thing, and then kind of placed wonders relative to each other. So, yeah, I mean, there's going to be some arbitrary stuff here, right? Like, some stuff in, like, at the high end of F is going to be very close to E tier.
I think
doesn't grade them that differently in practice. It's just where he put them.
Yeah, again, I think there's a lot of really good wonders in tiers 5, 6, and 7. I think some of them are maybe being unduly punished for being early in the game and hard to get. But, like, Colossus, again, is a free trade route. I think Machu Picchu is also a free trade route.
Machu Picchu is not a free trade route. Machu Picchu gives all districts adjacent to mountains adjacency for those mountains.
Okay, maybe in Civ 5 it was a free trade route.
I don't think it was a wonder in Civ 5, was it?
I think it was, yeah. Okay, well, yeah, alright, then maybe Machu Picchu's not as good as I thought it was. But I still think Colossus is better than Tier 5. I think Colossus is certainly better than Huey Teocalli.
Well, I think that's another thing about it being the timing and also not people trying to get it versus the AI. It's like, in a normal game or a lower level game, sure, it would be a lot higher, but for a deity game, good luck with that.
Right. Yeah, and Great Bath and Stonehenge and also Machu Picchu are pretty much down here at the bottom because, you know, you're never able to build them on, you know, immortal or deity difficulties. The AI gets Machu Picchu ridiculously, like, soon. Like, it's in, like, a late classical tech, and, like, somehow the AIs are always building it, like, long before I even have the tech for it.
Machu Picchu was plus 25% gold from all trade routes and city connections in Civ 5.
That's right. That was actually pretty darn good.
Yeah, I remember being really good in Civ 5. I was thinking it was also similarly good in Civ 6, but I can never build it because the AIs always beat me to it. And then, yeah, down here we have the poor, lowly Panama Canal and Golden Gate Bridges, which are functional wonders, you know?
Yeah.
They do things. They do what they're supposed to do. But, good luck building either one of them in a place where it's actually useful.
Or rather, in a place where it's meaningful.
Yeah, especially considering how late into the game they show up.
Yeah. Pretty useful IRL, but not for winning a Civ game.
Right.
Although, yeah, they're cool at least.
One of the biggest
on people.
One of the biggest obstacles that I have to building canals is that the places where canals would be like the most useful are hill piles, and you can't build canals on hill piles. And there were many games like early on in Gathering Storm, I think was the one that added canals. Many games early on in my play with Gathering Storm where I would like plan for building a canal on a tile, and then I would research steam power, and it wouldn't let me build it there, and I'd be like, what the heck? And then I would notice it was a hill, and I would check, oh, can't build canals on hills. Dang it, I've been planning for that all game.
I feel like the Panama Canal should be allowed to ignore that restriction, just because of how challenging it was to construct a life compared to other canals.
And we're pretty sure it went through a few hills to get there.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a game restriction as opposed to a real-life restriction type of thing, but it's the same time. It's like, come on.
Well, the terrain through Panama there was not conducive to making canals. That was quite the engineering feat.
And wasn't there a bug in Civ 6 where either canals or the Panama Canal allowed naval units to enter mountain tiles and, like, pop out anywhere
it
else
was,
on the map?
I think it was the Inca's specific special mountain tunnels, but somehow you could run naval units through them. Maybe if the city was adjacent to it or something.
Okay, yeah, I was thinking it was canals that were doing that, but you might be right. It might have been the tunnel.
I remember it being Incas, yeah.
Well, yeah, the mountains behaved as canals is what happened. Yeah.
Yeah. That's quite the tunnel of love.
What the heck does the Great Lighthouse do in Civ 6? I don't remember the last time I built the Great Lighthouse in Civ 6.
Plus one movement to all naval ships.
You also go to, you get plus 3 gold and then Admiral Point per turn in addition to that movement for naval units. It's okay. I think the reason he has it quite that low is because the AI gets it pretty fast as well.
Yeah, it also has the problem for me of the same issue with the Colossus of I built my harbors adjacent to sea resources for that adjacency bonus, and now I've got to harvest one of them in order to build this and not necessarily be guaranteed to finish it. I also tend to really like the wonders that give you extra policy slots, and because of that for me personally, I would maybe move the Potala Palace up one tier, even though it is a diplomacy slot, which is generally not that good. But it comes at a time in the game where I'm building spies, so it actually comes at a point in the game where that extra diplomacy slot actually is really useful. So I would maybe move that up into tier 2, but that might just be a personal preference for me.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if it's quite as good as most of what's in tier 2.
And then Alhambra also is the free military slot, which if you're running one of the non-military governments for most of the game, you know, your classical republics and so forth, having that military slot available to you is really good. But that's going to be another situational thing.
And you can easily find useful things to put in a military slot.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I like to run conscription for most of the game, you know, just for the extra money.
But the more movement when starting in friendly territory is incredible, too, later on.
Yeah, that one's good for your surprise war decks. And then, of course, there's those periods of the game where you're...
It's good all war. It's not just for surprise war decks. As soon as you conquer a city, then when you start the next turn, you have more movement again.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Yeah, good point.
And that tends to chain in the late game.
Yeah, you're right.
I find I have that bonus more often than I don't, even when I'm, doing intercontinental invasions, it's true.
And then, I also like to run the policies that give you the discounts towards upgrading units.
For sure.
So,
you earn them all the time, but they are...
Having the extra military policy slot means I can run that and still have conscription going, which gives me more gold per turn to spend on upgrading the unit, so I get it done faster. So, yeah, Alhambra is like also... Alhambra and Potala Palace, I think, for me personally, would be like borderline tier 2 wonders.
I think we've beaten the topic. I think we won. What do you think?
We've defeated the inanimate object concept.
Cultural victory?
Domination victory.
Yes. I approve.
No, we're skipping the final topic.
Oh, we are.
Because look what time it is.
I'm great. I'm great.
Mackie can talk Civ all day.
I didn't really give a lot of worry, a warning for that, no.
Yeah, that's
true. I have to turn over there. Wait, no. Oh, okay. So now I have to find things.
Mackie's in one more topic mode.
No, I am best. Anyway, this has been episode 368 of Polycast. I'm Mackie Lewin, and I'm joined as usual by me and team.
Always for fun times.
Mega Bears fan.
I like wonders.
And you cannot lie. And Candace Albinus.
I think it has to be big wonders for that to apply.
Hey, you made it rhyme. Awesome.
Oh, no. Civilization 3, 4, 5, Beyond Earth, and 6 sound clips. Copyright Take-Two Interactive. Copyright The Polycast at thepolycast.net.
Put that on the tier list, too.